Green, who? Me?
Good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to be talking with you again this afternoon. We're just going to spend a short while this afternoon. Yeah, and as we said, we're going to split it into two halves, just to because it sort of the whole subject falls into two sort of halves. So I thought we would have the hymn in the middle to give us a bit of relief from that. So I just want you to do think with me just for a few moments about this subject of who, me. And you may be thinking, what's this about? I wonder whether you could indulge me slightly, and I want you to think back to your school days. Now, some of you will no doubt still be at school at the back, so maybe you don't have to think too far back. But for the rest of us, just indulge with me for a second and think back to your school days. What's your memory, what's your abiding memory of PE or your games lessons or whatever you called it at your school, the team games elements of your school life? It might have been football, it might have been hockey that you played, it might have been rugby, it might have been netball. Whatever it was that was your thing that you tended to play, I just want you to think of that and hold that in your mind for a second. Now, although, you know, clearly I have an athletic build, it may surprise you that I wasn't awarded all that many trophies for my contributions to sport at school. Again, it surprises me as well. But for me, that I have got an abiding memory of PE. And I'll tell you what it is. For me, my memories of PE are standing in a line on the school field. We're just about to go and start a sports lesson. And standing in a line, waiting to be picked for a team. The PE teacher has already picked two captains, one for each of the teams. We're going to split off and have a game of football or whatever. And I remember standing there, and it happened many times, waiting to be picked. And of course, maybe you remember, the sporty, popular kids got picked first, didn't they? They always got picked first, and they went on to one team or the other. And of course, I just waited for a while. And then, of course, you'd have the mildly sporty kids who you know, had some form of kind of sporting acumen. They would be picked next. And really, you'd be then left with this kind of mishmash of sporting misfits who were really kind of waiting to be selected by somebody's kind choice to one of the two teams. And again, I'm afraid this was a sort of category that I kind of came under, unfortunately. And fortunately, I wasn't massively bothered by that. It didn't give me too much concern. But you did feel a little bit of a Charlie standing there, waiting at someone's kind request to pick you to go onto their team. And really, all you were hoping was that you wouldn't be physically the last. And that was the aim at that stage. Maybe you were like that, I don't know. Maybe you were one of the more sporty ones. It's funny though, occasionally, and I mean very occasionally, it wouldn't happen like this, but occasionally I'd be picked halfway through the lineup. And maybe it was some kind of sick joke, I don't know. But you'd get this quite intense, odd feeling of, who me? You want me to go onto your team? And you're thinking, well, maybe they're pointing at somebody else. Maybe they haven't actually picked me at all. Maybe there was another Mark they were talking to. But no, you're thinking, no, they did. They picked me. I've been called to go onto that team. And it's a complete surprise. Completely out of the blue. You weren't expecting it so early on in this picking process. But sure enough, you'd been picked to go to this team. It was an unexpected calling. And it's funny because there's a number of people in Scripture who had a very similar calling. And I don't think it was for any kind of football team or for any sporting event. I don't think so. But there was a number of people who have been called in strange sort of ways. And a calling usually to go somewhere or to do something for God. And that's really what I wanted to have a very quick look at this evening. Just to introduce what we're going to be thinking about. And I want to start, if you have your Bibles handy, I could do with you looking. We're only going to be looking at a handful, but if you could try and turn them up, I think you'll find that's probably useful. We're going to start in the Old Testament. If you'll turn to the book of Jonah. Jonah's probably one of the harder books to find this evening, but you'll find it's nestled in there between Obadiah and Micah. I'll give you a minute to find that. You'll probably remember the story of Jonah reasonably well, so I'm not going to labour the point. But Jonah had been given a job by God. And God really calls Jonah, and Jonah wasn't expecting this. It wasn't an expected calling for Jonah. It was quite unexpected. We'll see what his reaction is there. So Jonah chapter 1, if you will, and let's start at verse 1. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me." So God wanted Jonah to go to Nineveh. Now Nineveh is in modern-day northern Iraq. And I think it would be fair to say, I think Jonah wanted to go to Nineveh as much as we would want to go to northern Iraq right now. It was that much. He just didn't want to go there. Nineveh was a bad place. It was a huge city, the largest city in Assyria, and it was full of non-God-fearing people, people who didn't have any time for God, who certainly didn't want to be told that they were doing the wrong thing. But that's what God wanted him to do. And I'm sure when Jonah was called by God in this way, Jonah's thoughts to himself must have been, "Who? Me? You want me to go where, God? You want me to go to Nineveh? No, you've got the wrong person. I'm not fit to go to Nineveh. I don't want to be going to Nineveh. You know, send somebody else. Don't send me to Nineveh. I can't do this." And of course, Jonah's faced with a choice at this point, wasn't he? He has now a choice. What's he going to do? And we can find out in the next verse. Verse 3. So Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. And he went down to Joppa, found a ship going to Tarshish, and paid the fare and went down to it, to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. So Jonah made his choice quite clear. He chooses to run away from God. Instead of doing what God has asked him to do and go to Nineveh, he chooses to go to Tarshish in a ship. And quite literally, I don't know if you can picture this on the map, but it quite literally is in the opposite direction. Nineveh was inland, quite a long way from where he was. And basically, Jonah was actually now heading out to sea in the opposite direction. He couldn't really get further apart. And of course, we know what happens. I'm not going to, again, labour it. He obviously gets on the boat. There's the big storm. Obviously, he has to be thrown overboard, and he's swallowed by the big fish. And he's in there for 3 days, 3 nights. And he gets obviously spat out onto dry land again. But what happens from here is that God gives Jonah a second chance. So let's read that in chapter 3. Chapter 3, he calls him again. What's Jonah going to do this time? What will he choose to do? Verse 1 of chapter 3. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you." Down to verse 4, and Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk, and he cried out and said, "Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown." So he has this second chance, and we know what happens. Jonah does the right thing, doesn't he? He makes the right choice finally, and Jonah's successful in that mission. You know, he goes to Nineveh, he talks to them, they do change their ways, they listen to him, and God doesn't destroy that city. And even though Jonah was daunted at first, he made the right choice in the end. And he got there in the end. He made that choice a good choice. Let's move on to another person. Come with me back to Exodus chapter 3. It's today's reading. I was going to deal with this morning and then realised we were going to talk about it this afternoon, so I didn't. But let's deal with that now. Exodus chapter 3. We're talking about Moses. And again, to be fair, we mentioned this this morning, didn't we? Exodus chapter 3. And really, just to set the scene, he's escaped from Egypt, having killed that Egyptian, and he's fled to Midian, where he's become a shepherd working for Jethro. And he eventually marries Jethro's daughter Zipporah, and is happily living life as a shepherd there for quite a number of years. So what happens then? What to change all this? Well, we talked about it earlier this morning, but it's the burning bush incident. Chapter 3 of Exodus, verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flame of fire from the midst of the bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, in verse 3, "I will now turn aside to see this great sight. Why the bush doesn't burn?" So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." So here we have Moses with this unexpected calling. He wasn't expecting to have this bush, come across this bush on fire. He wasn't expecting to have the voice of God from it. But that's what happens. And of course, God has a job for him. Down to verse 7. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. Down to verse 10. Come now. Here's the job bit. Therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So that's what God wanted him to do. So again, just like Jonah, Moses is faced with a choice. He has to choose what he's going to do here. And again, as was mentioned earlier, he's a bit reluctant to do that, wasn't he? He doesn't say no to God once. He actually says no to God five times, or tries to say no to God, or puts up excuses five times. Let's go through those very quickly. Verse 11. But Moses said, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring the children out of Egypt? Who am I to do this, God? I can't do this. But God in verse 12 says, don't worry, Moses, I'll be with you. You don't need to worry about that. I'll be with you every step of the way. And then in verse 13, Moses says to God, well, okay, if I get there, who am I going to tell them that sent me? Who am I going to say has sent me to do this? They're not going to talk to me on their own. Who should I say sent me? And God said to him, well, tell him my name. Give him my name and tell him I am who I am has sent you. They will listen to you then. And into chapter 4, the third time he comes up with an excuse. Verse 1, anyway, he says, okay, God, but what happens if they won't listen to me? I'm there, but what happens if they won't listen to me? Won't respect what I'm going to say? And God says, okay, I'll give you some miraculous signs. And he gives him the miraculous sign of the serpent, the rod that turns into a serpent, and the leprous hand in his coat, so that they will know that he has come from God and he means business. And down to verse 10, the fourth time he comes up with an excuse, he says to God, look, God, I'm not eloquent. I'm no orator. I'm going to find it difficult to speak. I'm slow of speech. I can't do that. I'm no person to be talking to the Pharaoh. And God says, don't worry. I will teach you what you need to say. I will put words in your mouth. You don't have to worry about what you're going to say. And finally, in verse 13, Moses comes up with his final excuse. And he's fairly direct, and he pretty much pleads with God and says, look, just please, God, send somebody else. Send somebody else to do this job. I'm not the man for this job. And as we know, God gets quite cross with Moses at that point and says, look, you've got Aaron. I've given to you Aaron. Take him, and he will help you. He will see you through all this. And you never really think of Moses, or I never did. I never thought of Moses as particularly a reluctant person or someone who was easily afraid, but clearly he was. He was a reluctant person to the mission that God wanted him to do. And I'm sure his attitude or his feeling inside was, again, very much, who me? You want me to go to Egypt? No, I don't think so, God. I can't go back there. I've been there before. They're not going to listen to me. I can't go. I cannot go. You've got the wrong person. Choose somebody else. That was his attitude. That was his initial reaction. And of course, just like Jonah, Moses came good in the end, didn't he? He did do a good job, and he faced all sorts of unexpected choices while he was there doing it. Scary, life-changing choices that he had to face whilst doing this for God. But he remained strong. He put his faith in God. He achieved great things in what he was doing, in bringing those Israelites out of Egypt. And he did a great job of doing it. Come with me to carry on this thing, to the New Testament, if you will. Just to look at just two more examples. Matthew chapter 4, if you will. We're going to look at the disciples and how Jesus called the disciples. And here we see in Matthew chapter 4 that Jesus is asking his disciples to make some life choices, to follow him. And again, not an easy decision for them to make, I'm sure. Matthew chapter 4, verse 18, let's start at. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brothers, Simon, called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And they immediately left their nets and followed him. Now Jesus asked them to follow them, and they seem to go straight away. There doesn't seem much who me business going on here, does there? They drop what they're doing, and off they go. And I'm not doubting that, but I do wonder whether it must have gone through their minds at some point, you know, just questioning what has been asked of them here. Not in a bad way, but just trying to evaluate what they were to do, what decision they were going to make. And I think they must have to a certain extent. But I mean, fortunately, they knew who Jesus was. They'd been looking for him. He'd been prophesied about. They'd heard John the Baptist talking about him. They've even spoken to Jesus. We see that in John chapter 1. But even so, when Jesus comes to them there on their beach or wherever they were, whether men in their nets, they must have questioned slightly, you know, because these were huge life choices. There was a huge crossroads they were at. You know, who me? Jesus wants me? I'm just a fisherman. Why would Jesus want me to follow him? And I wonder whether that must have just taken a moment to take on board, because, again, they were leaving behind their careers, their lives, their families to a certain extent to follow Jesus. But they made the right choice, and I'm not saying anything that they didn't. They did. They made the right choice. They followed Jesus. Again, we can read about the rest of them in the pages of Scripture there. Quickly, just related to this, just skip on a couple of chapters to chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9, because we see another disciple, so it's linked in with this, being called. And this time it's Matthew, the author of this book, of this gospel. So Matthew chapter 9, and it's a very similar calling to the fishermen. Let's just take a quick look at that, and it's very quick and to the point what happens. Verse 9 of chapter 9. And Jesus passed on from there, and he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, "Follow me." So he arose, and he followed him. Now, Matthew was a tax collector, as it says there. You know, he would have had a fairly corrupt lifestyle. I think that was fairly well thought. You know, that he would have been taking money from the Jews, giving it to the Romans, and obviously taking his commission, his cut along the way. So he was a wealthy man, I'm sure. He had a lot of money. He probably didn't have a lot of friends because of it. People didn't tend to like tax collectors, but he certainly would have been very secure and would have had quite a lifestyle from this money and from his job. So I'm absolutely 100% convinced he must have at least thought about it. He must have at least questioned when Jesus came to him. He must have gone through his mind, who me? I'm a tax collector. I'm a sinner. Why would you want me, Jesus, to follow you? Are you sure you want me to follow you? And of course, just like those fishermen, Matthew knew who Jesus was, that he'd seen him around. No doubt he's probably heard about or seen his miracles going on. But yet he still was presented with a choice. Even though he knew all that, he was presented with a choice. He could have done two things. He could have either remained a tax collector and been despised by most, or he could have follow Jesus and had a new way of life. That was the choice that he had. And as we know, he made the right choice. Again, it was a good thing that he did. But it's interesting to see what happens next, because if you come to the next verse, we see what happens when Jesus then goes to his house. Verse 10 of chapter 9. Now it happened, as Jesus sat at the table in the house, that behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with the tax collectors and sinners?" And when Jesus heard that, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician or a doctor, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I didn't come to the world to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." What a profound statement that was that Jesus made. And I'm sure that must have really helped the likes of Matthew, who maybe, if he did have any niggling doubts as to whether this was the right choice that he had made, would have really helped him. Because, you know, why would Jesus want him, a sinner, a tax collector? Well, Jesus answered that question. You know, he wasn't there to help people who were perfect. He was there to save people who were far from it. And this was Matthew. This was absolutely Matthew. Of course, it was each of the other disciples as well, just regular guys, sinners, people who didn't always do the right thing. And the exciting thing is that it's us too. We too are these people who Jesus came to save. We are these people who Jesus calls. And we're going to be dealing with that in a moment in the second half. And so there we have just only just four examples are on the screen. Four passages we went to have a look at examples of people being called. And we could have gone to many, many more, I realise, but hopefully you've kind of got the grasp of that. And again, we'll in the second half now, we'll look more at the context of that and see hopefully how that relates to us. Let's stop then for a hymn, if we can. Hymn 324. I picked this for a reason. I love this hymn. But this is all about, again, being called. Jesus calling us. People, again, calling him, calling the disciples and others. But Jesus calls us, all the tumult of our life's wild, restless sea. Day by day, his sweet voice soundeth, saying, Christian, follow me. Hymn 324.